Okay. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. For some of you, Easter is over. But for most of you, it is still Easter. And I'm going to ask a rhetorical question of everybody. How much of today did you spend embodying Friday? In other words, how many of you were actively or quietly engaged in crucifixion processes? Either crucifying yourself or crucifying someone else. How many of you didn't move into Resurrection Day today? Your own or the support of another's? Just tuck that question away. Would anyone like to wish me a happy Easter? Thank you. It was a day of joy, and it is a day of joy. To sort of tie the whole thing up in a simple nutshell, my birth was the first time that the divine idea of God was successfully introduced into the human condition. Oh yes, you had seers and prophets. You had those who believed in God. But no one was yet willing to be what could be called God with us, meaning with everyone in the human condition. You might say no one up to that point had been willing to step up to the plate and embody God rather than the human ego concept of existence. That made what you call Christmas a significant date, an event that was of universal significance. Because now there was someone stepping up to the plate who wasn't going to embrace and continue all the concepts of human existence which God was left out of, other than the simple act of observing and honoring His presence out there somewhere. And then, of course, you all have various records of my life as I grew up, and the things I did and the things I didn't do. I had plenty of opportunity to be distracted, just like every single one of you has. And the only benefit I had that you don't have is that I was never allowed to forget my source, my divine source, a source beyond the human condition, a source beyond mere copulation and the development of an embryo through what everyone else would call the normal processes. My mother was, as I've said before, an excellent Jewish mother, and she did not let me forget. When I was tempted to, quote, be like everyone else, join the crowd, you don't have a remembrance at the moment, which is why we get together to talk about remembering. And for me to provide you with imagery and ideas that help you to remember, that inspire ahas, little light bulbs going on. Even if it's just simply, wow, maybe that's true. Maybe what he's saying is true. I don't see it, but you know, maybe it's true. That's a little crack in your defenses, in your assuredness that you understand what you are and what everything else is. It creates a weakness in the shell, so to speak, in the ego structures. It helps you to imagine that there's a box, that there's an outside to, that you're caught inside of, you see. Something that wouldn't occur to you spontaneously. Now, we come to Easter, what you have come to call Easter. You have had in my life up to that point a record of my remembering who I was and not abandoning it in favor of the status quo, and my willingness to embody God. And to inspire in others an awareness that God is their source. And that all the things that I was doing, they could do also. That what was natural to me was natural to them. But I will tell you, they were still very caught up in their already existing definitions and concepts about themselves. They still saw themselves as matter bodies. They had difficulty grasping that they were ideas in the mind of God, that the infinite mind that God is was their source, and that everything about them was spirit, not matter. And so part of the success, if you want to put it this way, of my being present in that day was to provide them what you would call physical proof that the physical is spirit. Else they would not have had the evidence needed to help them break the habit, skip the tracks of their habit of how they thought about themselves, and to see themselves from outside the box. The crucifixion was nothing. I mean, they all understood crucifixions. They called for crucifixions. They watched crucifixions. They cheered when the one crucified died. It was a part of their the fiber of their community. That wasn't special. But the resurrection was. And what I want you all to be aware of is the significance in the fact that the resurrection was a resurrection of what? A physical body. What would be called a physical body. How is this significant? Because I'll tell you something. Matter cannot be resuscitated. Matter cannot be regenerated. Matter cannot be transfigured. Matter cannot be healed. It is generally accepted in the current belief system that when I resurrected, I was beyond the human condition. That everything about me was spirit, and yet there was my figure. Recognizable, except to Mary initially in the garden. This is important because I keep telling you that your body is the visibility and tangibility of your individuality, and your individuality is God-derived and is therefore eternal. That which renders it visible and tangible is equally eternal, is equally divine. And that's one of the things you have evidence of in the Easter story, the event commemorated by Easter. It demonstrated that what you call the body survives death. That which identifies you and renders you experienceable survives this element of existence that is seen only through or in the human condition, the experience of death, the event of death. It's only seen in the state of ignorance that you are in when you have forgotten what your source is and therefore what you are. Another aspect of it that's important not to overlook is that this state conceived to be beyond the human condition is present right where the human condition seems to be going on. After the resurrection, there was no ball of light with an opening in it that was obviously otherworldly or different, that anyone who wanted to see me could enter into. And in this rare and refined environment, see that I still existed. No. I was right in the same room. I could be touched. We could hug. I could be felt. You see, every moment you are confronted with reality and nothing else, right here and right now. Right now, everything that you are experiencing is the kingdom of heaven, experienced clearly or through a glass darkly, through, you could say, clearly or through the lens of the human condition. So my presence after the crucifixion and after the resurrection was a demonstration of the fact that all of you are in the middle of the kingdom of heaven, not recognizing it for what it is, but it's there just like I was there after the resurrection. In form. But the form wasn't matter. And the form had never been matter, even before the crucifixion. And the form of everyone else and the form of everything else had never been matter. You see? So Easter provided the demonstration of the fact that life is eternal, an unbroken whole without parts, called before and after, inside and outside. Life is eternal. And this life that is eternal is demonstrated or made obvious or experienceable by form, which is pure spirit. Pure spirit that configures itself to perfectly identify God's idea called you or me. And that's what's going on right now, today, in every moment. Sort of gets you to think outside of the box, doesn't it? You know, I showed that the here and the hereafter are both here. The ultimate is the only thing going on. Now comes the really significant point. My life that most of you are familiar with is your life. When you read it, this is your life. It's the process of waking up and coming home. You're here for the same reason I was here. To not forget to embody God. To remember to let God be present in you, not along with you, but as you. And to come to a point where you desire not to have any other presence of mind right where you are than God's presence of mind. That is the only thing you really are. And to consciously neglect to continue to give expression to what you think you are and what you think everything else is and how pleasant it makes things for you if you don't buck the system by seeing things a different way from the way everyone else is dreaming their life in the kingdom of heaven. You're here to remember what you are and to step up to the plate and let the God of you, let the Godness of you be what finds expression in your words, in your thoughts, and in your actions. You're never, ever going to get away from visibility and tangibility. In other words, what has been called form. What you are going to get away from is the way you've been defining form as matter, instead of spirit, which is purely and utterly divine and of God. if you were able to manage to get beyond form, you would have managed to get beyond creation. And I'll tell you, that is a void. That is an emptiness, if there ever could be such a thing. Creation, with a capital C, the movement of God, is absolutely experienceable. Experienceable in an infinitude of ever new form and expression. Oh, yeah? I guess you could say that the ascension proved that there was no form, because then I moved beyond form into the formless. Some sort of blissful experience that everyone imagines. But I'm going to tell you something. The reason everyone imagines that beyond the human condition and beyond even the state of resurrection, there is some sort of formless bliss. The only reason you think that is because if it's true and you can get there, it will mean that you won't have to step up to the plate and embody the presence of God instead of the presence of your definition of yourself. It's a cop-out. I have never been bodiless. I have never, in other words, been unidentified or unidentifiable. And none of you will be either. The moment any of you becomes unidentifiable, God will have become unidentified. And that would mean that God would have to become less than God, and that is an impossibility. Everyone had better simply accept the fact that there isn't a formless bliss, and that right now, with all of the forms you're experiencing, you're in the middle of the kingdom of heaven, and every single thing you're experiencing is divine. And the substance of everything you're sitting on, or feeling, or moving, is spirit moving at the behest of mind. They are ideas moving at the direction of the mind that formed them. Yes, yeah. You say, well, you said, I go before you to prepare a place for you. Well, I was preparing a place for you while I was here. I was preparing you for a place while I was here. I was preparing you for the kingdom of heaven you were already in, that you didn't dream was within your grasp. I went before you in time, we'll say. I went before you so that you might have the need to be the presence of God, since you couldn't pawn it off on me. My absence meant more capital S self-reliance would be called for. You would have to lean within. You would have to go to the place of excellence in you, the altar in you, and bring your devotion there, because that place of excellence in you is the Holy Spirit. which is nothing more than your right mind. Even now, you know, you notice that I don't take responsibility for you. I point you always in the direction of becoming more alive to what you divinely are, and point you in the direction of taking hold of it and practice leaning into it and listening, so that what you might be infilled with it, and so that it might overflow you and get extended to your brothers and sisters while you're still here, so that God gets clearly what? Embodied. Body, 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 body. Embodied. Here and now. So that the light that God is might illuminate your world, your definition of the world, and uncover to you that it is the kingdom of heaven, and that you are the Christ, that you are the son and daughter, the direct expression of God. There isn't another place to go. What? No way to get out of the human condition? You know? Well, what is the human condition? Is it the world? Is it Israel? Is it Iraq? Is it China? Is it the U.S.? Now remember, the human condition isn't something you're in. The human condition is something you're looking at the kingdom of heaven through. The human condition is all of the concepts and definitions that you've either made up or received from elsewhere and adopted as your own, and it's the sieve, the filter, through which you interpret the experience of the kingdom of heaven. The human condition is better described as the human conditioning of what? Your mind, that causes you not to see clearly, but through a glass darkly, to see the kingdom of heaven with distortions that you are convicted about, you are convinced about, and that you are devoted to. Now, there's no way to get out of the human condition that you're surrounded by, because there ain't no human condition you're surrounded by. There's a human conditioning of your mind with which you're coloring your experience of the kingdom of heaven. And how do you get out of that? You get out of that by reaching beyond it. Where to? Some spiritual realm? No. You turn within to the altar, the place of excellence in you, quietly. I'm going to say mindfully, not thinkingly, just mindfully. The presence of attention. And you desire to know of the Holy Spirit what the truth is. Or God, what the truth is. You turn to a point that never left you, because there's no way, no matter how differently you defined yourself, for you to not be the only thing you were created to be, or the only thing that the Father is being you as at this moment. Before the resurrection, everyone thought they were in a box. They thought they knew how things worked and what the parameters were. But after the resurrection, there was an outside to the box. There was an outside of the box that was still present inside the box. They could see it inside the box. Somebody who was in the afterlife was still in the box. You see? And of course, it was too hard for many to believe, and many didn't believe it, and today it's still hard for many to believe, and they don't believe it. Oh, it's just a religious belief. You know, the Christians all believe that junk. But the demonstration was there. And you know what? My life was a demonstration of the first, this is not the best choice of words, but the first insertion of divinity into the human condition that could be recognized from within the human condition by those experiencing the human condition. And then the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. Set. The contents of my life, the content of the presence of God in the human condition, it set it, we are going to say, in concrete. Something was accomplished from beginning to end that until the end hadn't been accomplished, but what was accomplished was the breaking of the perceived absoluteness of what everyone called the human condition or life. And it was done forever. Not any one of you has to break or undo the belief in material life. It doesn't need to be done again. It was done forever. That's why you could say it was done for you. It doesn't need to be accomplished again. Because it was done, it means that each one of you at this moment is free to wake up. Because you don't have to break the boundary. The boundary was broken and the boundary is gone. That is what makes the commemoration of Easter important, because it keeps present for you the opportunity to go ahead and wake up, to get the picture, to get the idea, so that you willingly inquire outside the box on a regular basis, so that you willingly dare to let yourself be what you're here to be, what you exist for, in other words. You're not here to be something as opposed to being someplace else, being what you're supposed to be. You're here. You exist for a reason, and that is to give voice to God, to give expression to God, to let God express right where you are. I'm talking to you right now. It's a demonstration that there's life after death. But it's not the same kind of demonstration that my physical presence would have. And it's not the same as it did have after the resurrection. I am not appearing physically right now because it would give you a significant distraction. You would begin to think of me as form. You would have a memory of my image in your mind. And you would begin to think of me as he and him instead of the presence of love. Instead of as the presence of mind that loves you so much that it wants you to recognize the presence of mind that you are. And that is the presence of God, and that this presence of mind is what is rendered visible and tangible by the gathering of spirit in a form that renders you experienceable. Visible, in other words, you could say. You see? It is time to get out of the human condition. But remember this. The human condition is the human conditioning that has been placed like colored glasses in front of your awareness. That causes you to see the kingdom of heaven in its divinity as though it were just a physical, material universe that has nothing to do with God, and that someday you will transcend. You know what? If you were going to transcend it, if that was what was going to happen, after the resurrection, you would not have seen a body. You might have heard a deep voice coming out of the ethers like in a seance that everyone could hear, eerie, mysterious. But bodiless, not embodied. If that were what you needed to learn about remembering who you are and coming home to the Father, that is what would have happened. What happened, though, demonstrated exactly what the facts are. There is life after death, and it is still identified and identifiable and huggable without the impediments that were associated with form when it was conceived to be matter and misinterpreted and treated inappropriately because it wasn't seen as spirit, and it wasn't seen as spirit gathered in a configuration that identifies the divine one that you are perfectly. And I'm telling you right now that the identification of you that spirit configures as is perfect and is therefore more beautiful, more symmetrical, exuding the energy of love than you're experiencing right now. And what did Easter demonstrate? That you don't have to wait to go to the hereafter to experience it, that it's time now to experience it, because there is no hereafter, there's only the here. And what the here divinely is in its ultimacy. I know there's no such word, but in its ultimacy. Understood correctly, Easter did away with the box. The box can never be successfully reestablished . This is the good news. There is no matter. All is mind. Mind is God. And the movement of mind that God is creation. And creation is recognizable to the mind that moves and sees its movement. It's experienceable by mind. And the substance of every idea in mind is, for lack of better words, substantial, not flimsy, not ethereal, not wispy, not almost recognizable, because it's so substanceless, but absolutely recognizable and experienceable. The story of my life is the story of your life. And because of what I did, you can now know it. Because you have something that happened from outside the box, that you were able to experience inside the box. Everyone in that day was able to experience what was happening from within the box. An out-of-the-box experience in the box. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling until you recognize that the box was a figment of the imagination. All of the ultimate, all of heaven is going on inside the box. Because creation is whole, and creation is singular, and creation is infinite. And there just ain't no place left for an independent and different experience of life to go on. Either you're having a different experience of the kingdom of heaven, or you're having an actual experience of the kingdom of heaven, a real experience of it. Either you are experiencing yourself as what you really are, or you're not. But what you're not experiencing is, I'm going to say, a non-experience of something that does exist. It doesn't make sense, does it? But that's called the human condition, and that's what everybody's been living. and never thinking outside of, never questioning. So, you already are and always have been outside the box. You're the mind in which infinite creation is experienced. It has never been in a box. You have never been in a box. But you can imagine a box and get into a very focused, tiny reverie about what it's like to be inside this box. And you can consciously ignore the rest. But that which is having this tiny infinitesimal reverie is something infinite. Remember, the dream has been dispelled. Its capacity to command your attention and keep you bound in it has been dispelled. And all you need to do is to bring a little bit of curiosity into play to see beyond your imagined boxes. A curiosity to see the more that's there than what you're seeing. Same old thing I've been saying for a long time. But I haven't brought it out from quite this standpoint that the blockage to your waking up is already gone, was actually already dispelled in the birth, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension. The mystery was demystified. It's already been demystified. You might be catching up on the demystification a little late, but it was demystified. And you do not have to overcome the state of mind, the state of the human condition that everyone was in, that had never been challenged, and that no one had ever thought to challenge, and which therefore constituted a boundary of great density for everyone inside the boundary. You're not undoing a fundamental illusion that absolutely everyone is committed to. That's been done. Let's go to the book. You might be surprised at how much this has to do with Easter, even though the word Easter is never used. We said before that the ego does not know what a real question is. I'm going to back up a little bit. With the grandeur of God in you, you have chosen to be little and to lament your littleness within the system which dictated this choice. I'm sorry. With the grandeur of God in you, you have chosen to be little and to lament your littleness. See, that was life before Christmas and Easter. Within the system which dictated this choice, the lament is inevitable. In other words, within the box, within the human conditioning that served as a filter that distorted everything about the kingdom of heaven that everyone was looking at. within the system which dictated this choice, the lament is inevitable. Your littleness, and I will say everyone's littleness then, is taken for granted there. Your littleness was taken granted. Everyone's littleness was taken for granted. And your littleness is taken for granted there, within that filter system. And you do not ask, who granted it? The question is meaningless within the ego's thought system because it opens the whole thought system to question. You see, the resurrection demonstrated that the here and the hereafter are all here. That the limits that everyone thought were all there was to life were pure imagination. In other words, it demonstrated that there really wasn't a box at all. Who granted it? The question is meaningless within the box, within the ego's thought system, because it opens up the whole thought system to question. When you ask a real question, Father, help me. When you ask a real question, Holy Spirit, what's really going on here? That's a real question because there is an answer to it. But the ego doesn't recognize it as a meaningful question because you're not asking the question of the ego, right? It only sees meaningful questions as questions you bring to it. We said before that the ego does not know what a real question is. Lack of knowledge of any kind is always associated with unwillingness to know, and produces a total lack of knowledge, a total lack of knowledge, simply because knowledge is total. You see, before the birth and the crucifixion and the resurrection and the ascension, everyone was unwilling to know more than the human condition as it was thought to be, because no one had any place from which to have an idea that went beyond it. You see? And so they didn't ask. They were embodying an unwillingness. Not to question, continuing, not to question your littleness, therefore, is to deny all knowledge and keep the ego's whole thought system intact. Wow. Well, it's true, isn't it? Man, oh man, the ego just does not like to have the status of the status quo to be changed. I mean, gee whiz, all I did was come in and share a little bit about God. Ooh, it upset the ego's thought system. The Roman guards were worried. The Jewish rabbis were worried. I was upsetting the apple cart, you see. The ego wants to hold its thought system intact because change, it cannot allow change. It cannot cope with change. Now, you cannot retain part of a thought system because it can be questioned only at its foundation. In other words, I had to undo the box not the things going on inside the box. You see? The box, the human conditioning that served as a filter that distorted everyone's clear experience of the kingdom of heaven that they were in, needed to be identified for what it was, a way of seeing that had been adopted, rather than actual physical circumstances that were beyond everyone's control. You cannot retain part of a thought system because it can be questioned only at its foundation. And this must be questioned from where? Beyond it. Because within it, its foundation does stand. You see, I appeared after everyone knew I was dead. That's the edge of the box, isn't it? That was always the edge of the box. The edge of the, one edge of the box was where birth happened. And when you got to the other edge of the box, that's where death happened. And when you know that that's all there is, there's no way to change or have a new thought present itself. You cannot retain part of a thought system because it can be questioned only at its foundation. And this must be questioned from beyond it because within it, its foundation does stand. The Holy Spirit, your right mind, judges against the reality of the ego's thought system merely because he knows its foundation is not true. You see, the ego is nothing but the collected thoughts and theories and beliefs that explain the edges of the box and everything in between. It does not conceive of there being anything outside it, before it, above it. So someone who was not within the box had to speak apparently within the box and be in a way that demonstrated that the box didn't really exist. And that's what the birth, crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension did. And what it did was illustrate the truth about you to you, so that you might abandon the box, so that you might abandon determining yourself to be a hunk of matter that came forth from material processes that had nothing to do with the God, and that are governed by the laws of matter instead of the laws of spirit, who are bound to be born, grow up, grow old, grow ill, and die, where healing cannot occur because it's not built into the system, you see, but it isn't true. Because form is spirit, and because spirit has as its function to conform to, configure to, the ideas that God sets into place, it is not bound to carry out death processes and it is not bound to not, shall I say, reconform visibly as that which is perfectly whole and healthy where deterioration or injury or accident had been before. The Holy Spirit judges against the reality of the ego's thought system merely because he knows its foundation is not true. Therefore, nothing that arises from it means anything. See, and we started talking about the Holy Spirit. We're talking about the real you. Your attention is being pointed outside the box. Your attention is being directed to that which knows the truth, that is at the bottom line, for lack of better words, the real you right now. So we're talking about something outside of the box, the set of definitions that you have been using to understand who and what you are. You see, you have definitions. Yeah, you're a physical body. Yeah, it can be injured. Yeah, it can get old. Yeah, you can mistreat it and it will suffer. And yeah, if you do it too much or too badly, you can go beyond the point of return. You see, it's not true. We're going outside the box here. The Holy Spirit, your real mind, judges against the reality of the ego's thought system merely because he knows its foundation is not true. There is no box. There are no edges. Therefore, nothing that arises from it means anything. The Holy Spirit judges every belief you hold in terms of where it comes from. If it comes from God, he knows it to be true. If it does not, he knows that it is meaningless. There ain't no box. Whenever you question your value, in other words, whenever you look at yourself through your human conditioning that causes you to see what's called a human condition, say, God... Uh-oh, that went right outside the box, didn't it? God himself is incomplete without me. Well, that doesn't make sense at all because we talked about outside the box, but I'm inside the box. You see? No, there ain't no box. And that's what the birth and the crucifixion and the resurrection and the ascension demonstrated. There ain't no box. There ain't no material life. There ain't no matter. It's all the kingdom of heaven, right here, right now, seen clearly or not. But you're never seeing something else. And you aren't ever anything else, anything other than the Christ, seeing it clearly or not clearly. You're never anything less than exactly what God is embodying of himself right where you are, even though the totality of it is not being consciously embraced by you, because you'd rather be tiny and have your own personal perspective and enjoy the thrill of being out of your right mind. Whenever you question your value, say, God himself is incomplete without me. I did not do this during the flogging and the trip up the hill with the cross. I didn't question my value, but it would have been easy. I could have said, what a fool I've been. I'm so out of sync with everything in this world that I shouldn't be surprised that I'm being treated this way. What an asshole I have been. I could have had such a pleasant life like everybody else. No. When you turn to the Holy Spirit, when you go within, to the altar within, and you reach out, you're expressing a devotion to that place where you're bringing your attention. And you express the devotion by actually bringing your attention there. And I never wavered in my having my attention throughout Good Friday on God and letting Him be me. I embodied the statement, God Himself is incomplete without me. Remember this when the ego speaks. And there was a lot of ego speaking as I went along the streets, and the jeers and the taunts, and, you know, to say nothing of the determination that I was to die from the upper authorities. Remember this when the ego speaks, and you will not hear it. The truth about you is so lofty that nothing unworthy of God is worthy of you. Which means that all of your private little thoughts that you enjoy so much, all of the thoughts of tininess and belittling that you engage in about yourself and others, they're not worthy of you because you're not matter. You're not a physical organism. Every evidence of life throughout your body is the movement of spirit, governed by the laws of God, with one intent: to identify the presence of your individuality perfectly. Again, the truth about you is so lofty that nothing unworthy of God is worthy of you. Choose then what you want in these terms. Don't be wishy-washy about it. Choose then what you want in these terms, and accept nothing that you would not offer to God as wholly fitting for Him. For you do not want anything else. You don't really want anything else. You're just so damn sure that there is a box, and that things work the way that you think they work, and that there's a beginning and an end, and probably not anything else. But certainly, if there is something else good, it's outside the box. It's after the end. It's when you get to the edge where it's called death, and it's beyond that somewhere. No, there ain't no box. And the kingdom of heaven and the wholeness of you is inside and outside this artificial boundary that everybody believes is real, and which my life undid forever. Choose then what you want in these terms, and accept nothing that you would not offer to God as wholly fitting for Him, for you do not want anything else. Return your part of Him, the part that you are. Return your part of Him, and He will give you all of Himself in exchange for your return of what belongs to Him and renders Him complete. that's what the crucifixion, resurrection, and ascension did. It returned to God what was God's. By publicly, we will say, in a way that could be recognized by everyone, that a choice was made to honor God rather than the status quo. The choice was made to be outside of the limits of the box everyone at that time thought they were confined by. And it was more important to do that than to conform. I made the choice to return to God the part of him that was his, that was me. That's what it demonstrated. Even right up to the bitter end, I did not yield to the demand to conform to the laws of man. In other words, to the framework of the human condition, the beliefs and belief structures of the human condition. Return your part of capital H, him, and he will give you all of himself in exchange for your return of what belongs to him and renders him complete. That's what my life illustrated, embodied. You hear that word? Use that word, embodied. Don't be afraid of being embodied. Remember that if God is not embodied, there is no creation. If God is not expressed, there is no creation. And God without creation is an oxymoron. Senseless, meaningless. My life and apparent death, resurrection, and ascension forever changed the world. Join me. And use your life for that. The hard work was done. I assure you. And I will continue to say, come on, guys. Come on, guys. I love you. And I look forward to being with all of you next week.